Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Smartcast. You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello everyone, I'm Maulik from Mint's personal finance team. In today's episode of Why Not Mint Money, I'll be speaking with Ronak Onkar, research head and co-fund manager of PPFAS Mutual Fund. The fund house is known for its top performing FlexiCap fund, which invests around 20 to 30% of its corpus in international stocks. It's also known for its value style of investing. But bound by SEBI's $7 billion industry-wide limit on overseas investments, PPFAS Mutual Fund has been unable to pour additional money into international stocks. This has been despite the markets looking attractive. Will this hurt the fund's returns in future? We ask Ronak. We also talked to him about what's looking attractive in the Indian market, because this is where the fund house can continue to invest freely. Ronak also explains what value investing means to PPFAS Mutual Fund. Let's hear it from him.
Hi, welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started on your money journey.
So Ronak, I'm going to just ask you some general questions about the markets. Also, one or two questions on PPFAS, of course. So one, just wanted to understand, where do you see opportunity to invest in the current market, and what sectors or themes, and why?
Sure. So the current market, if you see, whatever interest rate hikes that are factored into the narrative, that is always there. Inflation narrative, which was there in the past few months, actually toned down a little bit. Where most commodity prices have come down across the globe, except of crude, which has not moved down as much as some of the other commodities. Some of the supply side issues which people were complaining about, they are also turning a little bit okay now. Sure. The only worry now is with the demand destruction will happen in some sectors. So from a longer term point of view, consumer remains a very good space to invest in. If you find something good at the right valuations, it's something you should consider, because it has a stable cash flow generation capacity, and the businesses are simpler to understand. And because of the brand franchises, they will retain some of the market shares if they are running well. Secondly, in technology services, because India has been one of the largest beneficiary of that, technology services also has a tailwind, again, linked to US growth rate. So you might find cyclical downtrend here and there, but if you have a longer enough time horizon, you can ride out the volatility, and technology services tailwind also can be captured if you want to invest in that area. Another space in India, if you look at, is the banking space. Yeah. The private sector banks have been gaining market share for a long period of time from the PSU banks, and the industry also keeps growing. The credit growth overall also keeps increasing. So if you see, the balance sheet quality of some of these larger private sector banks has been very decent. Right since the COVID crash happened, people have been providing consistently, and NPAs are not expected to be out of whack completely.
Sure.
So that also will protect some of the credit growth for these banks. Balance sheets will remain a little healthy. And the other consumer franchise-based, fee-based income that they keep generating, that also is a good place for them to keep scaling up. So all opportunities are available for them as long as there is something, nothing major happens in their lending book. So banking, consumer and tech services is there. In generic pharma, that space has had again a long tailwind, but which got interrupted because of the FDA issues many companies faced. So if you have a well diversified generic pharma business which is exporting across the globe in different geographies, that also has a reasonable runway ahead of it. Some of these longer term ideas are there. Sure. Again, some cyclical ideas like auto or some power sector related ideas also have been trending recently. But they are also interesting spaces because some of these cycles are yet to start revamping. So this is a long narrative of capex coming in from private sector that also might kick in, because there has been a pending underinvestment in many of these areas, especially in the power and capital goods side.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see that segment also coming up, but not holding our breath for the overall cycle to turn. But some of the ideas are interesting from a valuation point of view, from a cash flow generation and dividend point of view. Some ideas we also have in the portfolio have been interesting to see from that point of view.
Also, like, you know, coming to this debate of value investing versus growth investing, and PPFAS is of course a firm believer in value investing. So do you expect value to kind of outperform in the coming years? I mean, it's already been doing sort of well, you know, and in terms of valuations, you know, how is the Indian market looking today?
So compared to, say, the last 6 months or 8 months back, a lot of valuations have corrected or moderated, I would say, not completely corrected.
Mm-hmm.
In areas where companies require external capital to fund their growth, either from debt or equity, those companies have hit significantly higher than some of the other stable businesses, which can generate their own cash flow and grow. So from that point of view, valuations have moderated. We actually are finding decent ideas to deploy our own incremental investments across the market. So that also reflects in the overall cash position that we have. It is now somewhere close to 5-6%, which used to be 9-10% just a couple of months back. So interestingly, this time we are seeing stable businesses remaining stable. So it's not like they are very, very cheap and at throwaway prices, but you are able to at least allocate some capital, and existing companies which you already have conviction in, they are also getting incremental allocation because valuations are still in the stable range.
Got it.
That is one. Your second question was about,
value
and growth.
Yeah, value and growth.
So in our way of thinking, we don't distinguish value and growth too much because, see, the value is only useful if there is a growth component to it.
Sure.
So when you mention value from a traditional definition point of view, which involves companies which don't have an incremental growth trajectory and they're just using their same assets to generate additional earnings, like say a commodity business who does not have an incremental upside to what they are selling. It's just that when the market gives that commodity certain value, higher value, they generate a higher operating leverage from that. So that is a traditional value, which is again working like you're saying, but it's part of the commodity cycle.
Sure.
But when you look at value investing as a concept, when we look at it that way, we see growth as a good component to it. So if a company has a consistent ability to grow over a period of time, now the debate can be between your growth rate and my growth rate, which is fine, but it has to have some growth trajectory. It has to have high return on capital expectations over a period of time, which will benefit because of the growth.
Right.
So having a high return on capital business without any growth, you're just going to buy a steady business which generates too much cash and take the money out because there is no reinvestment avenue.
Right.
Your company can reinvest that same money at incrementally higher cost return on capital.
Right.
Then you actually benefit from the growth over a period of time.
Got
so you compound it over a period of time, becomes a much larger business, much more profitable business over a period of time. So that is our hunting ground. We actually don't look at just because it's cheap and it's interesting. It should be cheap, it should be growing, it should also have good management quality, it should be a good business to be in, and the business should have enough trajectory of operations in the past. We can study that as to how it has performed over a period of time. Something we should be comfortable to hold for a long time, and the moment the valuations go out of our comfort zone, we are happy to exit and wait for the chance to come back again.
Got it, sure. Today, like, do you think small caps and mid caps have fallen a lot? Are they looking more attractive compared to large caps? And would you look at specific stocks within, you know, the small and the mid cap space today?
Many are looking attractive, but again, it depends on business to business. So just using the bunch of small and mid cap doesn't make sense. Some of them are really commodity businesses which have crashed because the commodities have crashed.
Sure.
You need to separate the businesses from sustainable cash flow and commodity valuations point of view.
Okay.
So there are some companies, wouldn't want to highlight too many stock specific things. It's the fact sheet is demonstrating all the small mid cap holdings that we have. But there is definitely a lot more fall in the small and mid cap space than we have seen in the large cap space. The benefit of the FlexiCap fund is that we can take advantage of all these in the same fund. We don't need to have a separate dedicated small cap thought process. Whenever we see we can allocate some additional capital, we can. And taxable also is beneficial with the smaller fund.
Right. Sure. Also, you know what, like now with the markets expecting the Fed tightening not to be as severe as they were expecting it earlier. So the expectations, I think, change from week to week. What are like some of the key negatives that you would say that investors need to watch out for today then?
I think key negatives will be some demand destruction because people would have maybe over-levered themselves, especially globally, because developed markets are slightly more levered from a consumer point of view also, business point of view also. if the leverage goes away and growth expectations go away, then demand actually shrinks. That shrinks the economy a little bit, that reduces the inflation, that doesn't put any pressure on the interest rate cycle over a period of time. But if you see demand going down, we have seen that there is some correlation with companies in our country which are dependent on the export business. So you can see a cyclical lull in some of these businesses. But again, as an investor, you have to stomach that volatility. If you like that business, you have to go with whatever growth rates the business can generate. Of course, any business will try to remain competitive and keep growing. But it's not always possible that you're going to get the exact same growth rate you're anticipating, or even the management can predict how much the growth rate they're going to get. So we have to go with what the market is giving, and if you have a long enough timeline and you have patience to wait, there is no compulsion for you to exit from these businesses. Actually, it's a good time to ride it out and accumulate and build your position size accordingly.
So PPFAS mutual fund, specifically if we talk about your FlexiCap scheme, it's had about 20-30% exposure to international stocks, and but this has always been in the big American tech companies, and this has of course worked for the scheme. So just wanted to understand, will you, you know, ever look beyond this small set of companies, or is it going to be like this always?
So this is actually a recent phenomenon where we are more skewed towards global tech businesses.
Okay.
In the past, if you see, since the inception of the scheme, we have had a variety of different companies.
Okay.
So we used to own Nestle parent company, we used to own 3M parent company, we used to own UPS, we used to own Anheuser-Busch, we used to own IBM, we used to own British American Tobacco, so Standard Chartered Bank. So there's a wide variety of companies we have owned in the past.
Okay.
It's just that the recent past, these companies have looked more attractive from a valuation and growth point of view. And we have moved from those ideas to this ideas.
Sure.
So that opportunity hunting continues. So we have a 200 stock universe in the global stocks. Within that, these companies look most attractive. So tomorrow, these companies for some reason do not look as attractive, there's always another company in that universe we can replace it with. So we are not married to the idea of staying invested in these global tech names for market reasons. It's because these are individually good businesses.
Okay.
So when people say global tech, actually if you see the portfolio, we have Alphabet, we have Amazon, we have Microsoft, and we have Meta, which is Facebook. Now to some extent, Alphabet's Google subsidiaries business and Facebook's business are more or less similar because they are in digital advertising. If you see Amazon, it's a totally different animal. It has a combination of several businesses. It's a retail e-commerce site. It has a marketplace model where it's a B2B business.
Right.
It's a cloud computing business. It's an advertising business. It's also a private label business. It is also a logistics business. So there are several businesses combined into one entity which generates overall. It's also physical stores with the companies they have acquired and their own Amazon Go stores. So right now the portfolio skews towards the Nasdaq tech heavy businesses, but that's not always been the case. It has been different businesses also.
Okay, makes sense. Also, so then PPFAS MF had you know, restarted fresh inflows into the FlexiCap fund from 15th of March. But unless there are, you know, large redemptions, you will be unable to, you know, employ more funds into international stocks. So will this kind of, you know, dilute the returns of your, you know, FlexiCap fund, which is actually a top performing fund in that category?
So just wanted to correct what you said. So the reason we stopped international investing is because of the RBI's overall limit of 7 billion was hit.
Correct.
Now that was hit somewhere in January end. So for February 1st, we decided to shut the scheme, assuming that the limit will be revised in the couple of weeks down the line. But after a month of waiting, we realized that it may not happen immediately. It may take a longer time. And you're also seeing valuations correcting in our domestic market.
Right.
So larger part of the portfolio is still domestic. It's minimum 65% you have to invest in India. So it really makes sense to at least invest in our own market where it is possible to invest. And investors are willing to give us money. So we reopened the scheme, communicating that whenever the RBI limit is raised again, we will be able to rebalance and bring it to 30%. So on 30, we are now 22% because incremental flows have not gone there.
Correct.
And whatever stock price volatility would have happened for international stocks would have affected the overall portfolio holding of foreign stocks. But the intention is to retain some diversification. So we have not sold a single share or redeemed any money or repatriated the dollars in India. So we continue to invest and stay invested in those businesses to the extent we have already put money. And incrementally, we will be happy to put more money. It's just that they have become a little attractive now because the stocks have fallen. But we have to wait because regulators have to raise that limit.
Do you have like any expectations in terms of, you know, when will this overseas investment limit be raised? Because as it is, the RBI is intervening to keep the rupee from falling too much.
So I think expectations from us will be as soon as possible, but we have to also look at the reality of the market. So when was this limit closed? At that time, the Russia-Ukraine war had just started. The commodity inflation was also quite high. So we have to understand that there will be a lot more priorities for the regulator to handle first. And whenever it is raised, it is a welcome move. It is anyway going to benefit the entire mutual fund industry.
Right. So if I look at your portfolio between October 2021 and May 2022, the share of overseas equity, it's come down from 31% to 23%.
Yes.
And cash has gone up from 3 to 10%. Domestic equity is roughly the same only. So is this essentially because of the constraints within which you're operating, or is this also reflective of the market fall?
So the 30%, 22% is also because the foreign stocks would have fallen.
Right.
Plus they are not deploying incremental money there.
Mm-hmm.
So that is 30-22% now. As per June fact sheet, the cash balance is much lower.
Right.
We deployed some money in a stock in the portfolio. So cash balance will generally be residual. It will be something where we are not able to allocate right now, but it will be waiting to be allocated.
Got
so
it.
3-4% cash anyway will be there. If some redemption happens, it takes care of it. We don't have to sell anything to pay down, bring up the cash levels. But incremental flow will be kept in cash only if there is nothing else to invest. So
okay.
Cash is the residual.
Okay. And between May and June, what has changed that, you know, you've deployed the extra cash that you had with you?
We added one stock called Coal India.
Okay.
We ramped up the position size for that stock, which took up some stock. And these other stocks also took some flow.
Okay. So I understand there's that regulatory limitation that you have right now. And so you can't invest in international stocks.
Yeah.
You can still choose, of course, domestic stocks. But, you know, this is kind of like the USP of the scheme. Is it going to affect your returns going forward?
So returns and USP do not go hand in hand. So returns is again the basis of which businesses we choose to invest in, either
sure.
domestic or international.
Mm-hmm.
So that can returns can evaporate because of lack of returns from existing stocks in domestic market also. So it's not just because of international.
Yeah.
And when we have seen in the past that both portions have contributed at different points in time. So at some points in time, we have seen Indian markets falling. Global stocks have held the NAV to some extent. When global stocks have fallen, Indian markets have been stable. Sometimes both have fallen or risen at the same time. So it's very difficult to predict one correlation of doing this versus the other.
Sure.
As long as we're choosing the businesses with the same principles.
Mm-hmm.
So good quality management, good quality businesses, long runway, competitive advantage, cash flow generation ability, no need to depend on outside people's money, very limited debt in the business, and available at reasonable valuations. As long as we're not playing with fire in terms of going into deadly valuations and difficult businesses to understand, we are okay. I think returns will follow eventually.
Your Nasdaq and the S&P 500 have corrected a fair bit.
Yes.
So in that sense, it seems like a missed opportunity because you can't deploy additional money into these stocks.
Yeah.
So hypothetically, one were to say, suppose you had 100 rupees worth of additional inflows today and there wasn't this limitation, how would you allocate that money today in the scheme?
Allocate in 70-30 manner, which we used to do before. So
okay.
Global stocks are, like you said, cheap right now and we're aching to put money there, but we'll wait for the limits to be opened. So till then, we have to satisfy ourselves with domestic businesses, which anyway is a larger investment universe for us. So
right.
As long as there are ideas there, we will deploy.
So that's it for now, listeners. Thanks for tuning in. If you have any personal finance questions, you can email them to us at mintmoney@livemint.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Maulik_Madhu. That is MAULIK_MADHU.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.